So we've got a little bit of a continuation of a theme from last week. A couple of high school experiences, a new TV show I really like, and a little Spaceballs thrown in there.
You are my density. You are my density.
So I went to sushi last weekend with a buddy of mine who's retired. I had a couple drinks. I wasn't like, you know, super drunk or anything. And I think, and for some reason, they treat me really well at the sushi place. Maybe because I stand out or just I'm such an idiot, you know, while I'm eating and I'm just, I don't know, excitable and stuff. But anyway, when I was leaving, I was driving home and I kind of had a little bit of a leaving Las Vegas moment. I wasn't drunk really, so I wasn't too worried about that. I was speeding. I wasn't like going super fast, but enough for a ticket, kind of on the borderline there, you know, 10, 15 miles over. And yeah, so I didn't even notice this car pulls up next to me. I thought it was just some guy like, you know, looking at me like an asshole, and it was a cop, but I didn't even realize, and I'm staring at him almost like the Nicolas Cage thing and Leaving Las Vegas. And then he kind of turns his lights on and goes in front of me and kind of, you know, I was like, am I being pulled over? What the hell is going on? And then he just kind of kept going, turned his lights off. I completely slowed down, went over way to the right and just like drove like a nun the rest of the way home. But yeah, speaking of Leaving Las Vegas from 1995, I don't know. I always thought the director, Mike Figgis, was kind of a phony. I don't know, like wearing a beret and some shit. I don't know. I could be completely wrong, but I'm usually an exceptional judge of character. Except my own, of course. And while we're on the topic of death, we weren't on the topic of death. But anyway, speaking of death, you know the cemetery I always mention, Pierce Brothers in Westwood? Yeah, they are auctioning off a mausoleum wall crypt that's like right near Marilyn Monroe's wall crypt. Hugh Hefner is just to her left, and he seemed like a sleazebag. But anyway, it's supposed to fetch like $400,000 maybe. And hey, I love movies as much as anybody, but paying that much to be buried by a celebrity, it's like you don't even know. It's like, what is the point of that? I mean, is your life that not valuable that you need validation after death to be near Marilyn Monroe? I don't get that at all, man. Even if I was loaded as hell, I wouldn't do that. Anyway, I will do a podcast about Pierce Brothers and kind of go over some of the inhabitants. There's a new series on AMC with Clive Owen. He plays like an aging, world-weary Sam Spade. It's called Monsieur Spade. It's set in France. He's playing the famous Humphrey Bogart detective, Sam Spade, who was in The Maltese Falcon, which I had mentioned before. It was written by Dashiell Hammett, mostly in San Francisco, and that John's Grill over there in San Francisco is where kind of it's, you know, it's set in the book, and also that's where he kind of wrote the book. That's worth checking out, that restaurant. But yeah, the show is just like so up my alley. It's ridiculous. The lead character drinks and he's kind of getting older, losing his looks, but maybe has a little charm left, or more than a little charm left. I have a little charm. I keep it in my pocket. It's a little bracelet. Sorry, that's a terrible joke. But there is a great line in it. Someone is talking to him and he says, about like, you know, something about a calendar or something. He goes, I stopped looking at calendars and mirrors a long time ago. Yes, me too. And like I said, it's set in France, and the character has some great bon mots, if that's how you say it. It means good word in French, but it really just means like a clever remark. I try to occasionally bust out the occasional bon mot. And anyway, another good one from the show is one character is like sitting there, and he says to Clive Owen, Sam Spade, he says, I'm watching my weight. And then Clive Owen says, watching it do what? Pretty good, fellas. Not pretty good fellas, but pretty good fellas. Good job. Anyway. And there's a new True Detective that's supposed to be fairly decent. It's only 6 episodes, which is a total bonus. I rarely watch anything more than that. Monsieur Spade also has 6 episodes. So that's a major draw. The first True Detective, it was corny as hell, but gripping. I mean, I did like, you know, okay, what's going to happen next week? I was into it. Second one was kind of a mess. Vince Vaughn was just a mess. Colin Farrell is always good in everything, though, so he made it worthwhile. God, when he, like, cries and stuff, he's one of the greatest, like, actors at crying. It's like, wow. The third one, I didn't even understand. I totally lost the train of thought with it. I'm like, what is going on? It's like the only thing cool is Stephen Dorff's old man aging makeup. Looked pretty good. But anyway, from the second season of True Detective, me and Buckley will never forget this scene where Taylor Kitsch is, he's like a California, you know, highway patrolman cop or whatever. He's on a motorcycle. He pulls someone over and it's like his fucking helmet is so comically big. It looks ridiculous. Please look it up. It's like, you know, this isn't a low budget, you know, show. It's like, couldn't they find one that fits? I mean, if I would have seen him walk out with that, I was the director or anyone on the crew, I'd be like, oh yeah, that looks ridiculous. Maybe they were just lazy. I don't even know. But it completely reminded me of the Rick Moranis character, Dark Helmet, from Mel Brooks' Spaceballs from 1987. Kind of a Star Wars takeoff. Fairly funny. I haven't seen it in a while. But Rick Moranis is the kind of like the Darth Vader character, and he has this ridiculously huge helmet. He can't, like, breathe in it and shit. It's got John Candy, Joan Rivers, Bill Pullman as a kind of Han Solo, Mel Brooks, and Daphne Zuniga, who I used to love. There's a couple or a few great quotes from it that are kind of funny. In one, Dark Helmet goes, "Now you see evil will always triumph because good is dumb." And in kind of a funny takeoff of the "I am your father" line from Darth Vader to Luke Skywalker, Dark Helmet says, "I am your father's brother's nephew's cousin's former roommate." And Mel Brooks plays Yogurt, kind of a takeoff of Yoda. He's in this like little teeny goofy looking outfit. And he says, "Please, please don't make a fuss. I'm just plain Yogurt." And one last one, Bill Pullman kind of has a memorable line kind of near the end. "So at last, we meet for the first time, for the last time." Kind of funny. And last episode, I mentioned the line from We Love You, Conrad, from Bye Bye Birdie. "Your singing makes us say P-U." And I guess P-U may come from the French infinitive puer, to stink. Capoue in French means that stinks. And again, from last episode, I was thinking about Play It Again, Sam, that little scene, and I came up with a not great scene set in a little diner and on a Sunday morning, but I can throw it at you. And if someone wants to use it again, just let me know and I'll sell it to them. So a guy sitting in a diner, it's Sunday morning, he's looking at the Sunday paper. A girl is sitting at, you know, at another table, and he kind of, you know, looks over and says, "Hey, what are you doing Saturday night?" And she says, "You mean like last night?" And he says, no, I mean this coming Saturday. And he says, "Why, hypothetically, would you have gone out with me last night?" And she says, "No, but at least it would have been in the past." I don't know, there's maybe like a germ of a something in that scene, maybe, needs a rewrite. And as we recall, Conan said, "Grant me revenge." And I've always remembered that revenge is a dish best served cold, kind of like the potato soup, vichy soise, or gazpacho. I actually keep all of my revenge in the freezer. I figure the colder the better, right? But the quote is from Pierre Chodolos de Laclos from his 1789 book, Dangerous Liaisons. I don't feel like pronouncing it in French. I remember seeing the movie Dangerous Liaisons in 1988, directed by Stephen Frears. I saw the theater. It was with Glenn Close, John Malkovich, Michelle Pfeiffer, Uma Thurman, and a fairly young Keanu Reeves. I was still pretty unexperienced with women. And I remember seeing Uma Thurman's boobs in that movie on the big screen. And it was almost kind of a mystical, like spiritual moment. I was kind of just like, oh my God, okay, I'm on board with those. Speaking of spiritual moments, her father is actually like a serious Buddhist scholar, kind of one of the most, influential in the US. And then weirdly enough, speaking about boobs really quickly, there's a classic line from, weirdly enough, a Stephen Frears movie from 1983, Naked, with David Thewlis. I saw this in the theater as well. He's just kind of a cretin of a man, just a scum, somewhat intellectual, but just putrid. And there's a scene where a woman puts his hands on her breasts, and he says, "Thanks for the mammaries," which is clever as shit. And Ethan Hawke, that dope, cheated on Uma Thurman and broke their marriage up. I think he cheated on her with the nanny or something. And I was never a big fan of Ethan Hawke. He was kind of a pretty boy. But after the breakup, he just kind of got wrecked just ragged. I kind of like his like weathered visage these days. I don't know if that's how you say visage. But he's still pretty annoying. And I was listening to the Bang the Drum Slowly end title scene the title credits, in title credits, as I am wont to do. And I noticed the movie poster, which said, "Nothing is more important than friendship, not fame, not money, not death," which is a pretty cool line. I mean, I think friends are where it's at. It's kind of, friends are kind of everything in my book. And, you know, going out to eat and wine, a couple other things. But there's a couple great lines from the movie, which I had mentioned before. It's kind of about a simpleton, second-rate baseball catcher who gets a terminal illness. He's played by Robert De Niro. And then his buddy, kind of a more of a star player on the team, is Michael Moriarty. And everyone kind of makes fun of De Niro in the movie and blah, blah, blah. But one nice moment is De Niro's character who, finds out he's dying. And he says to Michael Moriarty, "Everybody'd be nice to you if they knew you were dying." And Michael Moriarty says, "Everybody knows everybody is dying. That's why people are as good as they are." I don't know about that quote. I don't think, I don't know about as good as people are. Maybe it should have been like as good as they should be or as good as they can be. Because generally people are kind of shit. And then the final line of the movie, "From here on in, I rag nobody," which is a great line. The book actually had an extended line. "From here on in, I rag nobody. Do you think you're going to live forever? Is life so long that you'd rather rag somebody than be nice to them?" And anyway, this line kind of, you know, ragging on people got me thinking a little bit about myself a bit. And I was an occasional prick in high school. There was this one kid, his name was Chris. He was kind of a mess. Just wore kind of weird clothes, and he was just super awkward and just, you know, kind of odd. And I would make fun of him. And God, it's like, kids were so cruel to each other back in the day. I mean, maybe they still are, but you know, it's like your brains haven't developed. You have no empathy, and people are just making fun of people for how they look, or, you know, if they're weird looking or something. It's just, I don't know. It's just a kind of a tragic time. And I've been thinking about it recently with some kind of regret, but there was some kind of karmic justice, because I was screwing around with this kid and I tried to shut his locker door and he let go and I shut it on my pinky and almost cut my pinky off. They had to like put a pin in it, and the finger still bugs me to this day here and there. It's real sensitive and a kind of a continual reminder, like, not to be a dickhead. But anyway, I hope, you know, his life turned out okay. And I regret making his days any shittier than they already were. And then that got me thinking about this girl in high school. She was, you know, kind of large, and God, she was picked on by everyone. I didn't really pick on her from what I remember, but I just remember, you know, several times she would just be sitting there and just, you know, on the verge of tears or crying. And like I said, I didn't really pick on her, but I didn't have the balls either to kind of stand up for her or to comfort her. And poor girl tearing up, and it's just like, God damn it. That is awful. But, you know, kids are kids. And I've always been sensitive, but after becoming like a psych nurse, it's like, it's almost like now I'm an exposed nerve. I could cry at the drop of a hat, and but taking care of people at their lowest point, it's pretty intense, and I try to give it, you know, my all at work. I'm relatively new at it, and I think it's kind of destroying me in the process, but hey, what you gonna do? Something destroys us in the end. And now let's talk about a few movies. One I revisited recently is Nancy Savoca's Dogfight from 1991. It's with River Phoenix and Lily Taylor. It's about these Marines who are, you know, young, and they're playing this like cruel little game where they all try and find bring the most unattractive women they can find to a gathering, as like, you know, kind of like they bring them as their dates, and then whoever has the most unattractive one wins the dogfight. River Phoenix has some trepidations about bringing Lily Taylor there, but he does, and it's just, it's kind of a heartbreaking little movie. It's got some great performances by River Phoenix and Lily Taylor. You know, it kind of develops into this, like, you know, sweet little relationship between them over this one night before he's going to ship off to Vietnam. There's a great little moment near the end where they just, like, awkwardly kiss each other. It's just kind of a messy scene, but it's like you feel like the emotion. It's like, wow, that seems fucking real. There's kind of a great line at the end where River Phoenix, you know, kind of realizes, you know, he kind of been a shit in the past, and he's saying to his buddies, like, you know, how do we become these fucking idiots? Which, you know, I think we all can say to each other once in a while. And I found a sad, kind of nice little quote, though, about River Phoenix by his girlfriend, Samantha Mathis, who was there the night he died at the Viper Room. I guess he just, you know, had like a drink, supposedly, with like just like lethal levels of cocaine and heroin. And normally you don't drink that stuff. So there was something a little bit bizarre about the death. But anyway, she said in an article I read about River, "I'm looking at a photo of him right now. I think if River was still here, I think he'd be acting, directing, saving the environment, just living and hanging out. Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be nice?" Which is a nice little sentiment about, you know, somebody who's gone. Another great older movie about growing up is My Bodyguard from 1980, directed by Tony Bill. And I always get a kick out of it when somebody has two first names as their name. Tony, Bill, hey, Tony, Bill, David Keith, Keith David, Brian Keith, and so on. And the movie has Matt Dillon as kind of a bully asshole. Chris Makepeace is Clifford, this, you know, the target of the bullies. And then Adam Baldwin is this kind of hulking, reluctant, kind of mysterious student who's like a bodyguard, or he becomes the bodyguard, kind of. His name's Ricky. It's just great. It's touching as shit. A great friendship grows between Ricky and Clifford. You know, it's kind of necessarily a downer, but it's just, you know, it's like, it seems real, and it's just a lost little classic. I don't know if people talk about it anymore. I never hear about it, but God, it's worth seeing. It's pretty affecting. And then kind of on topic, off topic, there's a great high school movie. It's called Brick from 2005. It's kind of a noir mystery thing set in high school. It's directed by Rian Johnson in his directorial debut, and with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the lead character. That was one of his earlier movies. It's a twisty tale. It's like super stylishly directed, totally worth watching. And again, this was like a movie where I was like, okay, who directed this again? Who is that? Is this his first? What's going on? This is fucking good. So check that out. Anyway, I was on Amazon Prime, and I was looking at movies to watch, blah, blah, blah. And I saw, like, the ad for And Justice for All, like, the little cover art they had for it with Al Pacino. It's a 1979 movie directed by Norman Jewison. But it was, like, totally Photoshopped weird. It's, like, his head was, like, just too big, and you could tell it was, like, pasted on, and just the perspective was weird. It looked like shit. I mean, it was, like, the worst Photoshop ever. And I was, like, what? How did this get through the, you know, the approval process? I mean, I could have made a better one in 10 minutes. I used to love seeing posters like that. It's not as common anymore, but when, you know, whenever you'd have a movie with like a huge cast, and you couldn't get all these asshole actors together, even though you're paying them millions, you know, you couldn't get them together to take a fucking picture. So you have like, you know, just weird heads and bodies and fucking Chaz Palminteri in there, generally. But yeah, it's just, I used to love those posters, just the fucked up ones. And speaking of 10 minutes, Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys singer, he said he came up with the song God Only Knows, the great song, in like 10 little old minutes. But, you know, he famously scrambled his brain on drugs, and he might not be most reliable source of information, but it's a great little song, and I will attempt to do a little bit of it. I'm going to try to play my guitar a little bit louder. Jesus Christ. All right, let me try this again. There's one fucking chord that's so hard. Anyway. I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. Well, it isn't horrible, but kind of shitty. Okay, so we're going to wrap this episode up with a couple more songs. There's a great catchy one. I know Christmas has already passed, but hey, what the hell? It's a great catchy song by Kelly Clarkson called Underneath the Tree. Tonight, I'm gonna hold you close. Make sure that you know I was lost before you. Christmas was cold and gray. Another holiday, alone to celebrate. But then, one day, everything changed. You're all I need. Underneath the tree, you're here where you should be. Snow is falling as the carolers sing. It just wasn't the same. Alone on Christmas Day. Presents, what a beautiful sight. Don't mean a thing if you ain't holding me tight. You're all that I need. Underneath the tree. Great little song there. That part is pretty awesome. It just wasn't the same alone on Christmas Day. That little B, whatever, B something chord. And then finally, I was in BevMo the other day, and I heard this catchy as hell song I haven't heard in forever. It's Beach Baby by First Class, kind of a one-hit wonder. And I actually wasn't even, I was like, I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to buy any wine. I pretty much drink every day, but I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to take a break. And then when I walked in and I heard fucking Beach Baby, I'm like, oh, okay. God was saying to me, you made the right choice, my good man. I'm going to reward you for coming in. And here's this amazing song. And it's weird. Sometimes when I've been like utterly low, I'll walk into a grocery store or whatever. And like some random song, like an older song that I don't hear very often anywhere, it'll be playing like some weird, you know, Frankie Valli thing or something. And I'll be like, okay, maybe that is a sign. Like things are going to improve. Get past today. Listen to some music. Hope tomorrow is going to be better. I don't know if I believe in a higher power, but every once in a while I'm just like, well, that's kind of odd, you know, in a cool way. It's like, that's a little bit bizarre that that's playing or that that happened or whatever. It's like, maybe there is something to this fucking mess of life. Anyway, here's some Beach Baby. See you for now. Do you remember back in old L.A.? Oh, when everybody drove a Chevrolet. Whoa, whatever happened to the boy next door? The suntan crew cut all American mail. Remember dancing at the high school hop? Oh, the dress I ruined with soda pop? Oh, I didn't recognize the girl next door with beat up sneakers and a ponytail. Beach baby, give me your hand. Give me something that I can remember. Just like before, we can walk by the shore in the moonlight. Beach baby, there on the sand from July to the end of September. Surfing was fun, we'd be out in the sun every day.